This is the Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. Public health is the discipline that focuses on health on a societal scale. That means flu epidemics, Ebola viruses, and suicide are all under the banner of public health, and agencies such as the Federal Centers for Disease Control. At the Spokane County level, the agency that oversees all of that is the Spokane Regional Health District. The county's health officer is Dr. Bob Lutz. He's here in the studio to talk about some of these public health issues. We heard last week that the length of Americans' lives is going down. The reason given was, one of the reasons given was the opioid crisis. Does that surprise you that the average life expectancy has sort of...
It's plateaued.
Plateaued.
Yeah, I mean, actually, we can look back to 2015, 2016, where we saw sort of a leveling off and a slight decrease. And it's unfortunate, but the reality is that what we're seeing right now as a major cause of mortality for young people is what have been referred to as the diseases of despair. Most recently, they showed that, amazingly, the age group 25 to 34-year-olds in this past year has seen an increased mortality by 3%, and 35 to 44-year-olds by 1.6%, you know, which is unheard of in our recent history. And so it's an unfortunate reality. We live in a society where people are in despair, and drugs, accessible as they are, as they historically have been, are an out. And so for these individuals, they're dying by either drug overdoses or alcohol and cirrhosis or suicide. And so we look at this sort of interrelationship, what we refer to as these social determinants, these upstream factors that, you know, whereas we look at an outcome such as a disease or death, we have to understand that these are preceded by other situations that put these individuals who are at risk into these situations.
I want to read the top 10 leading causes of death last year, according to the National Center for Health Statistics. One is heart disease, two is cancer, three accidental injuries, four chronic lower respiratory diseases, and maybe we can talk about that a bit later, five is stroke, six is Alzheimer's, seven is diabetes, eight is flu and pneumonia, nine kidney disease, and 10 is suicide, 74% of all deaths from those 10.
When you look at the overall numbers, I mean, we're still seeing more than 600,000 Americans dying on a yearly basis by cancer and by heart disease. You know, numerically, if we look at what's estimated right now, a little bit more than 70,000 Americans last year lost their lives because of drug overdoses. It's still a small percentage, but nonetheless significant. And we're not seeing it necessarily going down. We're seeing it going up. So it really, to address the issue, and again, I think to the credit of the medical organizations, we've identified that it is a cause that providers dispensing medications, both physicians, nurse practitioners, dentists, we've all been at some level responsible for getting a significant percentage of people hooked on these medications. And once hooked, and if they don't have access, then they turn to illicit substances like heroin, like fentanyl, which again is of great concern. So, you know, we are starting to make incremental improvements. And certainly if you look at, for example, numbers of prescriptions, for the most part, nationally and locally, those prescribing rates have come down. Unfortunately, what we are looking at are the repercussions of that, the people who now have an addiction and then need to continually sort of stoke that addiction. And if they don't get it with a prescription medication, they'll get it with an illicit medication on the street. And as I've learned from law enforcement, heroin, a lot less expensive than an illicitly sold prescription medication. And if you're looking for a fix and you've got a little bit of money, then you're going to go where you can get your fix.
One of the offshoots is that of that, and I think about my wife who has all kinds of different medications, had a knee replacement a couple of years ago, is that she can't get medications for 3 months or for, you know, of convenience. She's got to be much more on top of the fact that I can only get drugs for 2 weeks or a month, and that's because, in part, because doctors don't want to, they need to be very careful with dispensing these opioids. Do you see that?
Yes. You know, both the CDC, locally within the state, there have been guidelines, recommendations on what are called prescribing practices, so such that, you know, depending upon the individual's age, you are limited, you are recommended to be limiting the number of pills prescribed. And there are, in certain situations, if people have certain chronic conditions, then physicians can write for more, but they have to justify that. It's one extra step. And so as a result, I think physicians, to some degree, rightfully so, have become somewhat shy and very cautious. I've even heard of new physicians, new nurse practitioners, not getting their DEA license simply so that they don't have the opportunity of prescribing those medications. What I get concerned about is that, you know, we've sort of gone to the extreme where now physicians are incredibly concerned, providers are incredibly concerned, such that they're not prescribing medications for individuals when they are either appropriate for that condition and or individuals who have been on opioids, prescribed opioids, controlled prescribed opioids that now don't have access to them. And as I mentioned earlier, Doug, if you don't have access to a medication that you have become addicted to, then you will find a similar medication that's unfortunately oftentimes on the street. And then you start running into the risk of not knowing exactly what you're taking. And that's where the whole fentanyl issue is of great concern.
So let's move on to suicide, which is 10th on the leading causes of death in 2017. In terms of suicide, I think about, as we get into winter, days get shorter, gets colder. Is this the time of year when people are more likely to commit suicide?
No, it's interesting. People will oftentimes try to find some seasonal variation, and unfortunately you can't find it. I mean, I've seen, if you look at the graphs, if you look at the data, you'll see increased rates of suicide in the summer because people are angry. You know, there's other things going on. I think at some level there's a bit of a misperception that all suicide is related to depression or anxiety. There was a study that came out this past year that looked at mental health issues. It's a common practice for us to try to find one factor that is causative. Unfortunately, oftentimes it's not the case. It's sort of a lot of different things come together. And what the study showed was that in those states where they were able to identify where they had mental health data on individuals who took their lives, less than 50% actually had a mental health diagnosis. Now, granted, maybe it was undiagnosed, but what they showed was that there were other factors, other stressors that were causative. Relationships, jobs, lack of jobs, economic problems, health. So there are a lot of factors which weigh into someone even giving consideration to taking his or her life. And unfortunately, what we're seeing right now, as I mentioned, that suicides of the diseases of despair, suicides is one of those. And people, again, are not seeing a way out. And so they take their lives. And they take their lives by a variety of means. You know, we talk about what's called means reduction. And means reduction simply means that we are going to reduce the means by which people may take their lives. What does that look like? Well, if they're going to take their life, for example, by overdosing, you try to take the medications away from them. You try to lessen the means by which they can take their lives. I mean, you look at guns. Okay, you look at firearm violence. You know, firearms are a major cause of suicide. Just locally, for example, Doug, within the county, last year by the medical examiner's data, almost 50% of suicides were caused by firearms. And of that 59 out of 122 suicides, 51 were by men. And so that, again, is consistent with the statistics. We see that men most oftentimes will use guns or firearms. And unfortunately, if someone uses a gun, it's 90% effective versus other means such as pills. We have a much lower, if you will, ability to take your life.
Have there been studies done that explore this? Why guns, at least in some demographics, are more likely to be the weapon of choice, so to speak, for suicide?
Quite simply, they're more readily available. They're just readily available. And people will oftentimes use what is readily available. I mean, one of the classic examples is that years ago back in the United Kingdom, people were putting their heads into ovens and dying basically of asphyxiation. And that was readily available. Okay, it was a painless means to take your life. So what did the government do? They changed the formulation of the gas for the stoves, and rates of suicide went down exponentially. So people will oftentimes choose the means by which they most readily have access to. And we know in our country, guns are readily available. And so if people are going to give serious consideration, and it's not, you know, oftentimes it's thought of as a real impulsive act. I mean, the reality is that, again, the studies have shown that people have thought this through. They have made a decision. Now, are they going to act on that decision? Not necessarily, but they've thought it through. And they've shown that in one study, about 70% of individuals acted out on that decision within 1 hour of making that. So if there is a means by which I can lessen the likelihood of them having the means to take their life, then I will have significant success in preventing them. Because again, it's not always the case that someone, well, I didn't succeed this time, I'm going to try again. It doesn't oftentimes happen that way.
Today on Inland Journal, we're talking with Dr. Bob Lutz. He's the health officer for the Spokane Regional Health District. So a question from a listener regarding suicide. In 2012, he writes, Washington began requiring healthcare providers to have training in suicide assessments and management and treatment, and yet the rates of suicide have gone up 19% from 2014 to 2016. What are we doing wrong? What's the disconnect, he asks. Yeah.
And I would say the rates are even going up higher. I mean, right now, if I look at the data, we look at the rates across the country went up about 25% since 1999. In Washington State, 20%. Just locally, I can just say that I looked at our data between 2016 and 2017, 34% increase in suicide. It's not all a provider level, however. I mean, I think it's imperative that providers, physicians, as a recognized source of information and health-related information, that providers are required to be trained. But honestly, the amount of training is minimal. You know, for physicians, it's a couple of hours that you have to sign off and take. But if you're not making it a regular part of your practice, then you're going to miss it, because it's not as if everybody comes in and they have that mental health concern that puts them at risk. It could be just something as, you know what, it's a bad day. I'm in a bad relationship. Things aren't good. I've thought this through. Oh, I haven't thought this through. It's not worth it. And it's really unfortunate that, you know, we have individuals who don't have that safety net. They feel hopeless. They feel as if their purpose in life is absent. And why am I even around? And so I think it's a great idea. And as a physician, taking that and being aware of that kind of training and taking advantage of it, essential. Nurses, likewise. I think everybody, however, should be aware of the warning signs of an individual who may be considering taking his or her life, and then being able to know how to intercede and how to find resources.
For years, it's been standard practice in the news business that we don't report suicides. And yet, we heard last week that one of our top military leaders committed suicide. You know, we know that Anthony Bourdain, a writer, chef, has committed suicide. We now talk about famous people committing suicide. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think you have to be aware of the fact that it's an issue. You know, I think a lot of times we don't want to talk about those types of issues because we're afraid that it may mobilize other individuals to doing it, this sort of mass effect. But it's part of raising awareness, and it's how you present the information. It's how you present the message. So I think denying it is doing just that, denying it. It's truly putting your head in the sand and saying it doesn't exist and therefore I'm not going to address it. I think you have to address it, and then importantly, you need to ask why. Why are people taking their lives? What about their life? What about the environment, the conditions in which they find themselves, is making them despair, is finding themselves without a purpose, is finding themselves without a support network that they can say, hey, you know what? I'm not feeling good about myself today. I could really use some help. And unfortunately, you know, we're not a society where people are always willing to ask for help. And so again, I think, you know, not talking about it is just that, not talking about it. I think we have to talk about it. You know, one of my colleagues who works with the school system, you know, he talks about this, the S word. You know, suicide. And, you know, it was, you know, growing up, parents didn't talk to their kids about the S word, sex. Well, parents are still uncomfortable about talking to their children about suicide. It has to be a conversation, Doug. It just has to be. Otherwise, parents will find themselves, what did I do wrong? What did I miss? They don't know what they've missed if they don't know to even talk about it. They have to feel comfortable about talking about it. And that's something that media can start to raise awareness about, that we as an agency, that we as a task force, that we as a community start having a conversation about how do we address suicide. You know, it's great to see universities. I know there's been presentations at different universities. I know that there is a task force, for example, at the community college looking at it, because it's a huge issue on campuses. But again, if I'm looking at suicide, although we are very concerned and very saddened by the loss of young people, statistically, it's not the young people that are most at risk. You know, it's not youths. I mean, yes, youths do take their lives, but when you talk with the experts, it's older individuals. It's older individuals. It's those individuals who, are in despair. It's those individuals at the end of their lives where they really, what is my purpose? Oh, I have a physical problem. Oh, you know, I've been living to take care of someone and I'm no longer having to take care of that person. So why am I even here? I'm a burden. And those are the individuals where we have to be of great, you know, concern about them taking their lives. And, of course, veterans. I mean, the rates of veteran suicide are high. The rates of suicide in the Native American population, Alaska Native population, incredibly high.
So let's go back to the motive of guns and their role as about half of the suicides in Spokane County are done by guns. And then the message from the NRA telling doctors to stay in your lane when it comes to gun violence, and doctors responding by saying, hey, this is our lane. So what about that debate locally among doctors and public health folks regarding gun violence, and how do we message it with regard to that conversation about suicide or about other forms of violence in our community?
I think it's a great question, Doug, and I realize it's somewhat rhetorically placed, but it's a conversation we have to have as a community and as a society. I think, you know, when you have, for example, the recent initiative that was passed across the state, very high percentage of people voting in Spokane County for
this is the gun violence initiative to take extra steps to make sure that people can't access guns as easily.
Right. It means reduction at some level. You know, again, if I looked just statistically at the number of suicides by guns in our community last year, 59 by the Spokane Medical Examiner's report in 2017. If I look at the number of homicides, you know, it was much smaller, much less. And if I look nationally, I know that 2/3 of all firearm-related deaths are suicides. So as physicians, as public health practitioners, as a community, we need to be looking at how we can address this issue. And so, you know, what I'd like to see, what I think we need to see, is a conversation. It's a dialogue. It's not a you're wrong, I'm right, you're right, I'm wrong. Okay, we have to be able to find middle ground for this. Because if not, then we're going to continue to have this issue that continues to be present. If I'm averaging 35,000 deaths, firearm-related deaths per year, over the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years, okay, it's a quote-unquote epidemic that we're willing to accept? I would say not. You know, if we had that number of people dying by cars, we'd be doing a lot to try to address motor vehicle collisions, okay? We still have a lot of motor vehicle collisions, 40,000 last year, okay? But you look at all the safety items that have been put in place to decrease that number, and we've gone down exponentially in car-related accidents. I mean, if you look at the number of vehicles on the road now versus 50 years ago, when a lot of these safety, or even, you know, 40 to 50 years ago, when a lot of these safety elements were put in cars, our rates have gone down exponentially. It's the same approach to firearm violence. Can we accept that? I would argue that as a society, we shouldn't. As physicians, we certainly won't. And as public health practitioners, we can't.
Is there a way to have that conversation without raising the hackles of, we're not trying to take your guns away, we're simply trying to keep people from using them to kill themselves? Is there a way to have that conversation? Or do you necessarily have to get into the availability of firearms point of that?
You know, it's a great conversation, Doug, and I think until we have those conversations, we
don't know. Yeah.
We truly don't know. It's not a conversation that I think we've been willing to entertain for any number of reasons. I look at 59 suicides by guns in last year in 2017. That's one per week. That's one per week, Doug, of an individual who took his or her life because of a gun. We have to have that conversation. We have to have appropriate bumpers, if you will. But until we have those conversations and until we're willing to have a discussion, a dialogue, we're going to continue to come up against this problem and then ask ourselves why.
Dr. Bob Lutz is the health officer for the Spokane Regional Health District. This was only part of our discussion. You can hear the full version at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Go to the Inland Journal page. Next week on the program, Alzheimer's and Native Americans. We'll talk with a WSU researcher who's leading a new center focused on the effect of Alzheimer's disease on American Indians. Inland Journal is Spokane Public Radio's weekly public affairs program. You can send your comments to inlandjournal@kpbx.org. Thank you for your support of the program and the radio station. I'm Doug Nadvornik.